This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Helen Farmer with you. We were out and about with House and House broadcasting live from Talal Al Ghaf, giving you a bit of a look behind the scenes of this up and coming community with their expert team. We're also discussing a little bit about the food as we broadcasted live from Rina and the school over the road, RGS. But it was Madeline Mendy, who was our superstar lawyer on hand, talking property, why you need to have both names on those title deeds, and answering all of your questions from spousal maintenance to where to divorce. That's coming your way right here on the Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. I'm always interested when a buzz goes in my phone and it's Madeline Mendy, because I messaged her earlier going, what do you want to talk about? And this is what she replied. Kidnapping. I've had a few this month. Abu Dhabi fast track marriages and property purchases. Having it in joint names, even if you don't work. So that is what we're talking about, because if it's hot, she knows about it. Madeline Mendy from Bin 7 Advocates and Legal Consultants. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out to Rina. Well, it's a lovely little spot here, sitting in the sun. I don't even know where to start. Actually, I do know where to start with this, because we've been talking property today with House and House. So let's start with that. The importance of having both names on the title deed, especially if one of those spouses is a stay-at-home parent. Talk us through why this is so crucial.
The importance of that is, now that you are able to, as non-Muslim, you're able to get divorced through the Dubai court. Dubai court does not do division of assets. So whoever has the property in their name keeps it. Yes, you are able to go and make a claim to say, well, I am the one that's contributed the most financially. There should be a rebalancing of the finances. But in reality, that's something you can do in theory, but not in practice.
So if a loan is taken for the deposit, for example, how does that then work?
So you keep the loan. So let's say, for example, you buy a house at 2.5 million, okay, and you just put it in the husband's, let's say you put it in the wife's name just to change the normal habits. You put it in the wife's name, but the husband took a loan for the deposit.
Mm-hmm. In his name.
In his name. When they get divorced, if they get divorced through the Dubai court, the wife keeps the whole property, he keeps the loan.
Okay, interesting. Yes. Okay. And then I guess I wanted to ask you about property after divorcing, about occupying that property. This is something I'm seeing an awful lot of questions about, which is, we're living together and it's horrendous, or I'm worried he's going to kick me out. Tell us a little bit about what the law says, especially if you are sharing a family home. Who's entitled to stay? Who's paying for it? What's going on, Madeline?
Yes. So I see a lot of those. So I'm glad we're discussing that today. In short, if you've bought a property and that property is in joint names, you're both entitled to remain in that property until you have a court order that tells you otherwise.
Okay.
You're both entitled to remain. Nobody can kick the other out.
What if someone tries?
Well, you call the police. Straight away, you call the police. I had a case not long ago. The lady called the police, and the husband at the time had changed the locks, but you have to change them back.
Okay. If you've got any questions for Madeline Mendy, get in touch. Cliff has just messaged this second saying, re-property purchase. We each have an apartment in our own names from before we met. We just married last year. We're living in my wife's place as it's nicer. Do you advise adding both names to both properties, and what is the process?
No, my advice on that is to just do a... they've just got married, he said. Either if the properties are of the same more or less value, then keep them all in separate names. They're what we call premarital assets. So his property will be protected. The problem is her property and how much payment he's putting into that property.
Okay.
So if he's paying the mortgage, or if he is paying the mortgage, then I'll definitely say at some point he should add himself on the title deeds.
What about a couple who are building an investment portfolio and it makes more financial sense to have that first owned property in the UAE in someone's name, and then you buy the next one in someone else's name, so you're not having to think about the deposit being higher?
Yes. I mean, that I would, and yes, it makes financial sense in terms of an investment, but then in that case I'll do it under a company and not individual.
Would you really?
Simply because, let's say you buy the first property. I have a couple that contacted me last week. The wife bought the property, everything in her name, everything in joint names, although it was all her sons, renovation of the property all in her name. he's now decided to leave, she has to give him 50% of that property. So if it's an investment, then it has to be a viable plan, and only through a business are you able to claim that 50-50. Otherwise, I'll buy everything in joint names.
Madeline, are you like me? Do you have frequent fantasies about just frisbeeing your laptop into the sea?
I wish.
I'm glad you haven't, otherwise I wouldn't be able to book you for the show today. When I asked earlier about what you wanted to talk about, you said that kidnapping is on the rise, that you have quite a few. Would you mind telling us what you mean by kidnapping when it comes to UA law in particular?
So, for me, there are different types of, there are two types of kidnapping. There's the what I call the small kidnapping, when you're going on holiday, you want to go on holiday, it's been agreed, last minute you fall out, and then one of the partners says, I don't want you to go anymore. And the person, let's say it's a mum, she travels for the 3 weeks they had agreed, she goes, she comes back. Technically, is that kidnapping? Yes, because you're leaving without the consent, but you're not permanently leaving. Mm-hmm. And I make a difference with that, because when you go and open a criminal case for kidnapping...
Could the husband do that? Could the aggrieved husband say, I've specifically said you're not to leave the country with my children, and now I'm going to go to the police?
Yeah, so he can... And that's the thing. When he goes to the police station, they will be asking him the background. So if he says, well, I had allowed her to go, and then at the last minute I decided not to, they will not open a case for kidnapping. They'll give the lady some time to be able to come back and see. But the real kidnapping we talk about on a Dubai scale, but also on an international scale, is permanent removal of a child from their habitual country of residence. So in short, you are running away with the child and you're not coming back. That's kidnapping.
And you say it's on the rise, and we've touched on it before, but why do you think that might be? I mean, I know we're seeing an awful lot of divorce cases right now as well.
Yes, I think the particularity of Dubai is you have multi-country, how can I call them?
Like mixed marriages.
Mixed marriages, yeah. Exactly. So you have mixed marriages. It's great. Often, once the relationship falls out, one or both of the parents want to go back to their home country, and the only country they have in common is Dubai. So one parent may decide, look, I'm going on holiday, I'm not coming back, or I'm going to cancel your visa, you have to leave the country, but I'm putting a travel ban on the child, and you have to remain, and the child has to remain here. So people are battling for children. And sometimes, I have a case at the moment where a mother has run out of the country with one child. It's a weapon also for getting more money from the other parent.
Okay. Madeline, we've had a question. It's somewhat related in terms of children across countries and borders. Rochelle was asking, does Madeline know if the UAE has jurisdiction in other countries? Saying, I'm trying to get a divorce from my husband who lives abroad and custody of our child who is with him at the moment. If I file divorce here and get custody, does the UAE have power to make my husband bring the child to me? I've spoken to a lawyer. He said yes, but I'm still unsure.
Well, unless it's a GCC country, there will be absolutely no way that order can then be applied in another country. Simply, in terms of finances, there might be some reciprocity with other countries, but when it comes to children, no. The court looks at the child's habitual country of residence. So be careful before spending that money with that lawyer.
Okay. Wise words indeed, she said diplomatically. If you've got any questions for Madeline Mendy, now is the time. A message came in earlier saying, if non-Muslim expats from a small EU country were to divorce here, which law would be applied and how would their assets most likely be split? Thank you.
So when we say here, I'm talking about Dubai because the law in Abu Dhabi is different. So if it's strictly asset in Dubai, if it's in your name, you keep it. If it's in joint name, it's divided 50-50. If it's Abu Dhabi, it is the same, although the wife is provided with some spousal maintenance, which is a lump sum.
Funny you should mention that, because we've had a question about spousal maintenance, which we're going to be coming to after past 11, asking if you get it if you don't have kids. We do have dogs. You just mentioned Abu Dhabi there. Can we quickly touch on the fast-track marriages?
Yes.
What do we need to know, and how fast-track are we talking?
I think they're the most brilliant thing that's been invented so far. You pay... So the normal process, I think it's within 2 weeks you can get divorced in Abu Dhabi, depending on the waiting list, if you pay 300 dirhams.
Thanks. To get married or divorced?
Get married.
Okay, you said divorce.
I always have divorce on my mind. Apologies. So you can get married within 2 weeks in Abu Dhabi in the normal circumstances. But if you want a fast track one, you go online, you pay 2,500 dirhams, and that next morning you can go in into the VIP section of the court and get married. Very quick VIP. Yes.
Can I just ask an indelicate question? Under what circumstances has that been very beneficial to couples, do you think?
I think it's beneficial for those couples that give birth without, that want to give birth, or whether the lady is pregnant and they want to give birth and have both name on the birth certificate without any issues. That's beneficial to those. Those couples that still want to go and do IVF, and although the law, there were talks about the law changing fully in terms of practice, it's still difficult. So that's a quick marriage that can be done.
It's been a busy old show so far. We're trying to help out as many people on the text line. You can be anonymous, completely understand. I also had loads of messages on social media earlier, Madeline. So let's start with that, actually. A got in touch saying, please no name, but recently learnt that my ex has inherited a significant amount of money, which means he can now afford more than the 3,000 dirhams he's currently providing to, quote unquote, support our two children. We're divorced here. We're both living here. What are my options?
Well, normally, I'm assuming if she says they're divorced here, there will be a settlement agreement. Whenever that settlement agreement has been made, there should have been some contingency or some wording in terms of future payments, especially inheritance, if the parents were still alive at the time, the grandparents were still alive at the time the agreement was made. But ultimately, every year, if you have a settlement agreement, you can go back to the Dubai court and say, the financial situation of my ex has changed. I want this to be reviewed. The problem with inheritance, though, depending where it's been received, might be difficult to prove to the Dubai court that the payment has been made.
We've also had a message, anonymous, and I know this listener is listening right now because it's just come in, on the kind of the flip side of that. So, gentleman saying, divorced in 2023, and was ruled that I provide financial payments to my ex-wife since she was awarded custody. I've lost my job. I'm in financial distress with multiple loans that I can't pay. Is there a legal way I can request the court to reduce what I must pay her monthly based on my financial conditions?
There is. And the cheapest way to do that is to go to your nearest Aladdin typing centre and ask the court to review the settlement. Show your redundancy letter to say that you don't have a job at the moment, and provide a copy of all your outstanding loans, so that they can reduce it accordingly.
Okay. Really hope that helps. I'm so sorry to hear about your situation, and really hope things turn around. But it's good to know that is in place, should you have the right documentation to prove that.
And
is
you
indeed
must do that. Otherwise, the flip side of that is an enforcement order will be made against him.
Okay. Madeline Mendy with us today. It is 4:39. We touched on spousal maintenance earlier. Anonymous message asking, do you get spousal maintenance if you don't have children? I'm sussing this out, as we have two dogs and I don't work. If we were to separate, those dogs would be my responsibility, and getting work and a salary would take time. I would say, if you're worried, start looking now. Yes. So talk to us about spousal maintenance.
So if we look at it just purely from a Dubai court perspective, you do get spousal maintenance, but it's a very limited amount, between 500 to 2,000 dirhams per month, maybe 5,000 if the husband is earning a significant amount of money, but that's limited in time, probably some 12 months if there are no children involved.
Okay.
In Abu Dhabi, you'll get spousal maintenance. They'll time the amount of years you've been married, time 25% of your husband's salary as a one-off payment, but that's all you get. They don't take into account that you need to stay at home to look after to look after those dogs.
Okay. So, yeah, well, we're taking into consideration those timelines.
Yes.
No name. Thank you so much for that. You're a very popular woman, Madeline. I'm going to try and get through as many as we can. Now, the times they are changing, and I'm sure the situations that you were looking at, 10 plus years ago, has very much changed. Have you had situations where dogs are caught up in custodial battles?
Yes, of course. I've just finished a case recently where we had to find a way amicably to have some money regularly paid in for the dogs, because for some people, dogs are their children,
also,
whether we want it or not.
Let's be honest, they ain't cheap, in terms of, vet bills, payments, all that. So these are the kind of things that you never think you'd need to factor in. Up next, we are going to come to something that you probably haven't even occurred to you. We're talking about what happens if you're going through IVF, if there is an embryo, and you get divorced halfway through. Madeline Mendy is with us in the studio today at Rena. She's been keeping us right on what kidnapping means in the UAE, why it's so important to have a property purchase in joint names, even if one of those spouses doesn't work, and 24 hours to get married in Abu Dhabi. If you missed that, you want to catch up, the podcast will be available very, very soon indeed. We've had a couple of last-minute requests on the text line, Madeline. So let's go to the text line. Let's help people out today. We've had a message here, which I think is a really, really interesting one, which is about visas, saying, I'm going through a bitter divorce with my husband. We've got two teenage kids. I might be offered a new job, which would be better pay for me. But currently, I'm a dependent under my husband's golden visa. The divorce is soon. Do you think it's better to join a company which will also give me a job visa? What is the catch? Visas for 2 years, and during that period, can I change jobs?
It's difficult for me to give advice just like that, because it will depend where the divorce is taking place.
Absolutely.
If the divorce is taking place in Dubai, it doesn't make any difference. If the divorce is taking place abroad, the golden visa element does make a difference in terms of jurisdiction. But generally, when people are able to self-sponsor, I tell them to.
Here's a hypothetical. I have a golden visa. Our kids are on it. Our nanny's on it. I was thinking about putting my husband on it. If we were to get divorced, the old Dubai rumour mill starts churning. We're not getting
Don't
divorced.
Plant seeds. Yeah.
Could I kick him off my golden visa? Or if it was amicable and it made sense for the family, could he remain on it even after divorce?
Yes. There isn't any link between the immigration and the court, the divorce court.
Okay.
So if you wish to keep him on your golden visa after divorce as a dependent, then you can do that. But if you want to, and that's the problem, if you want to cancel his visa, you can do that at any time.
Okay.
Ooh, and I've had people stuck in that situation. Yes.
Okay. SJ got in touch through social media earlier. We were talking about kind of modern divorces earlier, about custody of dogs and whatnot, but this is something that hadn't really occurred to me. SJ says, totally hypothetical, but I was chatting with a friend over the weekend who's going through IVF. Curious, what happens to embryos if a couple gets divorced halfway through the process?
Well, with the new law, or even with the old law, an embryo cannot be transferred into a spouse, into a woman, without the husband being present on the premises, okay, and without him signing a consent form.
Okay.
So that's already a difficulty. But also, the husband or the wife can write to the clinic where the embryos are kept, mm-hmm, and they can be destroyed.
That's really interesting. Yes. Have you had this? Has this come up with you?
I've had one case early in the year where there are six embryos in the clinic in Dubai, and they're fighting. Wife is fighting to try and keep them. And husband wants them destroyed.
Could then be an argument or discussion of, I give you permission, for that to be implanted, but I will not be responsible for supporting this child?
There is that, but the problem is, once the child is born, a wife can easily go and say, right, through DNA, I recognise this is the father, and you can't really cancel your rights of maintenance. Mm-hmm. So that's the difficulty.
This is a big question that's just come in, and I don't know if it's a big answer or a straightforward answer, saying, can a Muslim man refuse to divorce his wife?
He can refuse to divorce her, yes, he can, but then she can then go to court and ask for what we call a khula, which is when the wife applies for a divorce. There are two types of divorce for Muslim women. You can get a khula, where you basically give up all your rights to maintenance and you just get rid of your husband, or a divorce with what we call with harm, where you specifically give a reason why you should be divorced.
And that hasn't always been the case. We've got this kind of more idea of kind of amicable divorces, yes, now. But in situations such as that, where a woman really does and she's able to prove,
yes,
what would you need to supply in order to effectively prove that?
I mean, the proof for a Muslim woman, the proof would, if it's not a khula that she wants, but a divorce with harm, so she keeps her right but divorces her husband, she will have to have significant proof to be able to get divorced. Generally, they'll encourage the couple to simply stay separated, mm-hmm, so that the husband still has a financial obligation towards her and the children.
Madeline, we've run out of time. We haven't run out of questions. Really? So if anyone wants your I know, it goes fast. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Madeline Mandy, I would urge you to check her out on Instagram. You can give your account a shout out if you'd like.
So it's Madeline Mandy Legal.
thank you so, so much. We do have our legal clinic every single Monday afternoon from 4 o'clock.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Speaking now to one woman who has travelled the globe and not just Global Village. So delighted to be in conversation with Harmke Westervelt. I am so privileged that I get to meet people all day and learn from them and hear their stories, and it's a privilege to introduce you to inspirational people as well. She's a horse trainer who's been working with animals for decades and decades and came to the UAE to, well, work with the best in the business, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid, training endurance horses. You came back in 2006, but I want to start before then, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about your first memories of horses, Hamdan. Where did it begin for you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me.
It's a huge privilege
for me to be here. I think my first memory is basically when I was born, or actually before that, because my parents are horse trainers, and when my mother was pregnant with me, she was also riding horses.
Wow. So from the very beginning.
Yeah, I basically learned to ride before I was born.
Oh my gosh. It seems like there was inevitability that, you know, you were always going to work in this field, certainly with animals. Tell us a little bit about that as a child. What was it like growing up with some of the most magnificent beasts and really understanding what they were capable of and how they could encourage humans to become superhuman?
Actually, it was not at all my idea to become a horse trainer or to do anything with horses. I blamed the horses for the failure of my life as
a
child. I wanted to do gymnastics, I wanted to compete or be a ballerina or something like that, but I didn't want to do something with the horses, because the horses were the reason that my parents didn't have time for me.
Oh,
but the thing was, the horses were the only ones there to listen to me. So what I would do as a child, I would be really sad that I couldn't do my gymnastics, but who was I telling this story to the horses?
So they were there solving the problem as well as creating it.
So they were my therapist, my friend, my everything, and I just learned to communicate with them better than with anybody.
But you're not the first person I've spoken to who've said this, about this ability to communicate and to soothe. Tell us a little bit about the kind of some of the specific qualities in horses that you think can really foster that amazing connection and communication.
I think horses are much more simple and much more complex than people think. Simple in the way that they don't make stories in their head. They don't think, oh, but maybe she means this or maybe she means that. They go straight to the core. Which is also the complexity. Like, you cannot hide anything. You cannot make something up to them. It's one on one, and this is what I truly like. And they show me what I am, and I love to show them who I am and to be pure.
That's beautiful. You moved here in 2006. Tell us a little bit about what career success looked like when you were starting out as a horse trainer yourself. What were you looking at as being, this will be the pinnacle of my career, and how has that idea of success changed over the years, Hamdan?
I haven't been super ambitious, but I always ended up in situations where people had problems with horses and had difficulty solving them, so they would ask me to see if I could do something.
The horse whisperer.
Well, that's what I've been called many times.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it kind of came easy to me, because the language horse has always been, yeah, I think I speak horse fluent and human only like as my second language. So when I came here, it was the same. My father was breeding Arabian horses, so I always had a dream to come to the desert. And when I came here, I asked around to find a job. And when the manager of Sheikh Hamdan's stable spoke to me, he said, "What are your qualities and what can you do for us?" And I told him, "I'm not really that good with people, but I'm quite good with horses." And he told me, "Okay, I have some horses that are also not good with people. Maybe you can talk with those horses." And that's how it started.
Wow. We're going to be hearing more from Harmke Westervelt. She's with us today. Horse trainer for the royal family. And yes, I think it's safe to say dedicated horse whisperer. talking horses, but so much more now with Harmke Westervelt. She's from a small Dutch village and the youngest of six, and it sounds like was riding before she was even born. Surrounded by Arabian horses, she moved to the UAE in 2006 and has been working with the royal family on endurance horses. Can I ask you what that means? And we're talking about training for different reasons, seasons, events. Endurance in particular, why was that an area that you wanted to focus on, and what are some of the qualities of a horse that would do really, really well in that space, Harmke?
That was not so much a choice, but that is basically the biggest discipline in the UAE. So coming to the desert, that was for me the main thing to do, because dressage and show jumping, I could have stayed in Europe because that's really big there. But here it's all about endurance. And that is the same as training human athletes. You ride with a heart rate monitor, you ride with a GPS. So every second of the way, you know how your horse is doing. And I can see on my watch if the horse is getting tired, or of course, there are many things to take into account. It's not the numbers on the watch that tell you everything. But it's very similar to training a human. You just build up the athletic ability.
So what's been going on behind the scenes in terms of health and nutrition? And you're talking about technology there. I mean, the amount of time, dedication, finance involved in getting some of the best horses in the world to the absolute best physical form. What's changed in Dubai since you first moved here 18 years ago in terms of that technology and that precision medicine as well?
Well, actually, I'm not that updated on the current situation because right now I'm living on a farm. I'm no longer working for His Highness. But at that time, you cannot imagine. The stable for Sheikh Hamdan employed six veterinarians full-time, had its own clinic, its own laboratory. And this is so fascinating for somebody like me, or for anybody who has any interest in sports or in animals or in anything, because when you do scientific research, you have maybe 10, 20 horses to do research on, but we had 130 horses in the stable, and you could check their blood rates five times a day if you wanted to. You could take x-rays from all their legs every week if you wanted to. And this gives you a totally different perspective on everything that's going on, and you learn so much. Like the manager of the stable, he told me many times, okay, read the science, and then get back to me what they are saying. And 9 out of 10 times science was wrong. It was not what we were seeing in front of our eyes in the stable.
And that's the thing, you can look at the numbers, but you must have such a natural intuition from growing up around these animals and reading signs and reading behaviours. We've had a message here saying, what about retirement? That's a really interesting question about the what next. And I think about this with human athletes all the time. You know, where do you go? What do you do? You were talking earlier off air that, you know, some animals are going back to Europe. When did you start to realise that some horses might have had their best days, and then how do you manage them into retirement and a bit more relaxing than racing?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question, and a very important question that still needs more attention than it gets, because it's all nice and fun to build up towards being a good athlete, but retirement is a very important thing, and that's actually the reason why in the end I stopped my own stable, because I wanted to make the choices on my own terms and in the benefit of the horses and not wait till the end, because it's a very harsh climate in the UAE, and if you don't have a solution, then it's very difficult. Luckily, the royal family is having connections abroad, and some horses are actually sent elsewhere. But the horses that stay in the desert, they sometimes have a rough time dealing with the climate, especially because they come from five-star stables, you know, with air conditioning. And after that, it's difficult to adjust back to circumstances where that's not the case.
When you go out for a ride now, how often are you in the saddle, Harmke? How often are you able to have that time?
Oh, that will still happen daily. If I don't pay attention, that will still happen 12 hours a day like it was before. But I feel very privileged that I had the opportunity to close my stable on my own terms and to find something else to do in life, because it's beautiful. I've done it with all my heart. I've loved every second of it, but it's very narrow-minded. You do that and you do only that. You connect only with horse people. You look only at horses and you talk only horse. So
I'm glad you're talking horses with us now, though. So what does life look like now? What are you working on that you're excited about for the future?
Well, I am actually living in Chauka. I hope everybody knows Chauka, beautiful mountains in Rasachema.
Gorgeous. That's where I did a lot of mountain training. And if I have to climb those stairs one more time, I think I would weep. It is a beautiful, beautiful part of the UAE. Were you okay in the floods? You okay there?
Yeah, well, there is some damage, but everybody had damage. I was just so impressed with how the UAE handled it as a whole. And the little damage I have on the farm is nothing compared to the roads and what other people suffered. So that was fine, but it's just beautiful. After I closed the stable, I moved to the farm, and I am looking after a lot of other animals, but I don't have horses there.
Aww.
I still train, though. If anybody calls me with a problem with the horse, I will come over and work with the horse.
The horse whisperer will spring back into action. How can people find you online, follow you, and learn more about your career? Is there a way that we can see what life on the farm is like?
Well, I have two Instagram accounts. One is Horse Academy, which is more about my horse work. And the other one is travel_Chauka, which is more about my farm life.
That sounds beautiful. Thank you so, so much for sharing a little insight into your life. And I just love meeting people who are passionate about anything, but I can just hear from you the love you've had for your work over the years. And it's an absolute privilege, Chauka. Thank you so, so much for your time. So travel_Chauka
with an O is my Instagram account.
I'm going to check it out right now. Thank you. Really, really appreciate it. We are exploring Talal Al-Ghaf today, House and House on Hand. We can talk about buying, selling, renting, reselling. Or I had a question asking, is it too early to talk about resale value? But it's all about community. We are broadcasting from Rina, and as you can hear, it is quite the busy spot. And joining us from just over the road, we've got Mr. James Bennett. He's the assistant head and director of sports at RGS Guildford here in Dubai. Nice to have a little coffee instead of being with the kids, I'm sure, Mr. Bennett. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Helen. Yeah, I have been here a few times, but not in school hours. So thanks for inviting me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, you were with RGS, the OG, back in the UK for around a decade and then came over to set up the school itself. I've always really been curious about what it's like to establish a school from the beginning, you know, to kind of conceptualize it, everything from the learning side to the location. When you kind of reflect on how it's been, is there anything that's kind of surprised you, any twists and turns that you think are kind of worth reflecting on about education in Dubai right now?
Yeah, I mean, it was very daunting. I was at RGS UK Guildford for almost 10 years. Although it's a city, it is a community. It's a small village, really, in terms of seeing the parents out and about and at the park and things like that. So really bought into that. And when we came over here, it was very different. It's a brand new school in a brand new area. It was, for the first 2.5 years, really a building site. And
I mean, you say brand new school, brand spanking facilities. I mean, it has really set the standard, I think, certainly sports-wise, more than anything. And that must have been an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, really exciting. Obviously, heat index and weather and things like that. We're lucky we've got ISD Sports City that we partner with down the way for more indoor space. But we've got, brand new gym. Lovely pitch, lovely swimming pool, and then more to come as we start going into the senior age group. So that's really exciting, and hopefully some very exciting sort of building plans to extend the school, which is great.
Can I ask you about that community piece? Because as you said, you're not normally here during the working hours, although on a Friday afternoon, I'm sure there's lots of cries of Mr. Bennett world, having a coffee and a cookie at Rina. When you think about the community around Talal Al-Ghaf, I'm sure someone at the school will have the numbers, but do you feel like there are a lot of kids that live in the neighbourhood that are coming into school, and, you know, is it feeling like it's part of the scene?
100%. It feels more like home now. Certainly since this September, you know, I've started to notice people come to school on their bikes, the whole dream of being able to walk to school, parents finishing school, going home for a bit, dropping off their kids then later for after school clubs and swimming, Saturday mornings, doing football here at the school. And I'm a parent also, my daughter's in year two at school, so I'm sort of on the both sides of the fence. So I'll come down here on a Friday straight after school with Maya, and we'll have a coffee and a cookie, or a hot chocolate and a cookie, and there'll be lots of her friends there. And yeah, just the whole community feel of Talal Al-Ghaf, and because we're all in it really for the same thing, which is school education, but also making friends, socializing, that sort of stuff.
It's interesting because when I think compare like me and my husband's experiences of school growing up, I went to, you know, the village school and then went to the local high school, and he went to boarding school, and he was always he's quite envious, to be honest, of me having friends who were, when I go back to the UK, a lot of them are still there because, you know, we all grew up together and we went to school close to where we grew up, whereas he was very scattered. It was, you know, out of school time, his friends literally went all over the country. And I think to a lesser extent, Dubai can be a bit like that, that it's hard to have play dates if, you know, you're having to, you know, go 45 minutes across town, or it's hard to have a relationship with, you know, other kids' parents if you haven't, you know, it's just a bit, becomes a bit of a logistical nightmare. I think whenever I look on the mums groups about people looking to move to the UAE, so many are saying, you know, we're looking for a community where we can ride our bikes to school. We're looking for a community that, you know, is going to be really welcoming to families. And I feel like, and we're going to hear from House and House soon, but it sounds like Talal Al Ghaff has certainly got, you know, some of the really key foundations for that feel.
100%. And I mean, it's only, I've got two examples. So we did a parent and child golf night over at Trump's on Friday. Had 58 parents and children come to that, and large majority are from Talal Al Ghaff and other communities around the area. We've got Spring Fair this Friday, just on the pitch behind us now. So that'll be all set up. That's the Parents Association doing all of that. And again, just really nice to feel, yeah, like it is part of the community, because Dubai is, like you say, it is never just a walk away. Mm. And it's just becoming a bit more like that, which is the dream, to be able to walk to school and the coffee shop.
It is. Mr. Bennett with us today. Sorry, I can't call you James. I feel like I'm like, you know, a student myself. I'm curious, because we need to talk sport next, differences between here and the UK. We're chatting with the neighbour now. Joining us from RGS Guildford here in Dubai is one of the assistant heads and the head of sports, Mr. James Bennett. It's getting a bit, dare I say it, warm out there. So we had a message going, what about summer sports? Which I think is a really good question. How are you transitioning? Because when I drove past, kids are out, they've got their hats on, they're having a great old time, but in a month's time, that might not be the case.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges moving to Dubai. And it's a challenge every school faces. We've got a strict heat index policy. We're under that at the moment. So plenty of water breaks, shade, and trying to do some rounders and cricket. But off air, I've learnt that our daughters are both the same age, and we're currently trying to encourage them to do swim squad, which is pretty big in the summer months. We've got a nice pool here, and netball as well, and Cognita netball. I know your daughter's on as well as mine. So.
Loving it, absolutely loving it. We spoke about this on the show before, but I think it's a really important thing to address, which was how to not pass our own exercise as punishment onto our kids and encourage them to try new sports. Like, this is actually the really exciting thing of being a kid and having these multi-sports, you know, camps, and also through schools. If kids are coming in home being like, I don't want to do PE tomorrow, what is the best thing a parent can say to encourage them to lean in, get involved in some team? And they might not be the best, but, you know, you've got to be in it.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. I'm getting a little bit of that as well at the moment with certain sports, swim squad being one of them. And it's one of those where can't suddenly say, well, no, I want you to opt out, but at the same time you can't push too hard. So I think exposure to lots of different sports, and as I say, part of being an educational group with Cognita, that we've got after school sport with Enrich Me. So I've signed my daughter up to some netball. She does that, she does some ballet, she does glee club now as well. Do they count sports? Not sure, but
it's, I think, breathing, it's just, in it,
yeah, just supporting and not being a pushover, but at the same time encouraging to try lots of different things.
And we can all take a leaf out of that book as well. Just because we're grown-ups doesn't mean the fun stops. I think a lot of people are like, do you know what? I want to get back into walking netball. I want to get back in the pool again. I want to start doing, as one group is like, fat dad's football. You know, just we've got to set a bit of an example sometimes, I think. Mr. Bennett, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem.
You're heading back to school?
Yep, I've got basketball actually over at Gems Metropole. So, well, wish us luck.
Grab a coffee and a cookie. Mr. Bennett speaking to us from just over the road, RGS Guildford here in Talal Al Ghaff.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8. With House and House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
We will be catching up with the House and House team very soon. Already questions coming in for them about living in this part of town. But one of the linchpins of the community is where we're broadcasting from right now. Rina is such, I mean, as you might be able to hear, it's been buzzing since the moment we stepped through the door about 3 hours ago. Such an important gathering place for the community, surrounding areas, and we're talking food. We've got the founder, Haider, and we've got Chef with us as well. Haider, can I ask you about, because you have Cassette in Alcoz, you've got Net as well in, also in Alcoz, but in a different part, I suppose. When it comes to branching out and choosing, identifying a neighbourhood, but then a specific location, what's on your wish list? How do you start to think, yeah, that adds up. That makes sense from a restaurant point of view.
Well, it's basically about visions. What do you envision in particular areas? For example, Al Kors is very up and coming, very artsy, very hip and happening. I always refer to Al Kors as the sort of shortage of London. And it's beautiful, and it's proved that every single day, the art and culture hub. Same thing that came along with Tilal El Ghaf tag. Number one, they have, obviously, it's Majid Al Futtaim, which is me being in this country for so long, I have a full trust with their project. The second is when you look at their project and what they've put into it, you can actually visually see the concept forming in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time.
Well, that's exactly what Mr. Bennett from RGS was saying. You know, they came and it was a building site, and now what's happened over those two, three, 4 years is a community has kind of sprung up and already feels actually very, very well established and comfortable and easy and warm.
Absolutely. And it's a strategic location. It's beautiful. You can just see, I mean, obviously, we do follow others as well. People like RGS, if they're opening up here, you know, then they've done their research and
parents
they know what they're doing.
Parents need a coffee.
Absolutely.
So let's have a little look around us now. This is a beautiful, beautiful space. You know, you've really created something quite special. And from a kind of architectural design point of view, I just keep on coming back to this idea of textures and richness and warmth. What was the brief that you had in mind when it came to creating this space? Can you give us a little insight, either?
Well, it's all a part of the concept. So what we do when we look at a location, we think of the concept. And with our team, and especially with H2R Design, we sit down, we do the research, we do the demographics, see what is needed. Mm-hmm. It's what people want at the end of the day. The merging of all textures reflects onto the cuisine as well.
Chef's here.
The chef is here.
And I think it has to feel cohesive. It has to feel like we're in this space eating this food for a reason. It's, you know, that this joint can feel quite uncomfortable without even you understanding why sometimes. So that conversation is an ongoing one. And Chef, thank you so much for being with us. You are the man behind, as we said, you know, Net and Cassette, which have their own very kind of distinct DNA when it comes to food. When you're given a brief, when there's this new space, there's this new challenge of, this is the demographic, where do you start to go to when it comes to building a menu?
For me, it's all about the research that I have to do on the cuisine and everything else. Like the Mediterranean style, it's, you know, it's something new for me. So I play around on different cuisines, different places, continents, countries, and everything like that, and take it from there.
How do you know when something's a hit? Because I would imagine, I'm such a creature of habit. I'm looking at a menu and I'm like, I would definitely get the Spanish roasted chicken with orzo. Like that just like is tick, tick, tick. And I find it quite hard to like get away from my favorite. Have there been any favorites that have emerged? And you're like, ooh, a bit of a runaway success in Tilal El Ghaf.
Yes, there's been quite a few. Taking on consideration with the salads, especially even our sandwiches, some of the breakfast. There's a few numbers on there that's just taken everything by storm.
Make us hungry. Come on. What are some of your favorites and what's going well?
For me, the French toast is definitely a winner. We have the Caprese croissant. We have the vegan Spanish paella. We have the burrata pasta. We also have the Mediterranean burger. So there's a whole difference.
Now, as I said, this is the first time I've been here today, and looking at the menu, I've seen it online and I've seen it today. What my kind of takeaways are that there are some standout kind of dishes here that feel very special, in terms of I could come here for a date, you know, with my husband. And then there's this idea of it kind of being very neighbourhood and popping in for a quick salad, and you know, you've got some lovely, you know, I just had an oatmeal and raisin cookie, but you know, these kind of, how is it important to feel kind of part of that neighbourhood fabric, either?
Well, it's really important, actually. I would love to be on everyone's tongue to say, this is my local. We want to be your local. Mm-hmm. Catering for all your needs, for whatever time of the day, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's the go-to, not just for Tag, but also the neighboring communities around.
Of which there are many.
Well, you've got Arabian Ranches, Sports City.
Victory Heights.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Chef, just take your headphones off for a second. What's your favourite dish right now? I'm joking. What's your favourite dish on the menu right now? If you're like, you haven't been to Rina unless you have eaten what?
Two things, actually, that come to mind. One is... He's created, I've got to give him a big head here, but he created a Mediterranean omelette that is absolutely divine. It the moment you have it, you feel the freshness of every single ingredient.
Do you want me to read it out in my voiceover
voice?
Okay, ready. Omelette filled with chopped cherry tomatoes, pitted Kalamata olives, marinated artichokes, fresh parsley and mint, and crumbled feta with charred sourdough.
Okay.
And gluten-free option available, add on beef, bacon or salmon.
There we go.
So that we're starting with the omelette, and then what are we having?
Lunch, I do like the deconstructed lasagna as well. Beautiful, again, very fresh. Me personally, when I dig into my cuisine, into my dish, I like to taste every element of every ingredient so I can distinguish between every bite. And there's the creation of the dishes, and chef has created something that is very playful. The colors, the theme, it's perfectly imperfect, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does, because we want people to feel comfortable. You don't want someone to come in and sit down and be like, oh gosh, you've got to be on best behavior.
Absolutely.
It is that local feel, but design-wise, absolutely stunning. And thank you so much for having us. I think I might have to stay for dinner.
Absolute
Milani,
pleasure.
Milani, I'm booking a table for 5 o'clock. All right. One deconstructed lasagna coming up.
Done.
Hi there, chef. Thank you. Absolute pleasure to have you with us today, and great to be exploring the neighborhood with you. We are going to be chatting with House and House next about what is happening in this part of town. We've been talking schools, we've been talking food, but what about property? We've had questions coming in about what is on offer. And of course, if you do live here, you want to give a bit of a shout out to why you love it, or you've got any questions for the team, 4001, we'd be very happy to help.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House and House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
We are going to be talking about what it's like to live, work, play, buy, sell in Talal Al Ghaf. And joining us now, a senior expert in this area, Daniel Raphael. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm really well. You're grateful to have a little sit down. It sounds like you're very, very busy right now. Thank you for being here. You've been with the company for over 4 years now and working in this particular part of town for about a year. If someone had just landed in Dubai, or they're starting to do their research on different neighbourhoods, they're looking to move here, what would be your top line about Talal Al Ghaf?
Top line, jeez. I think primarily it's about looking at what the future has to hold. It's somewhat early days in the community. Only the Elan townhouse community or sub-community has handed over. We're going through handover with Harmony at the moment, or Harmony One. But going up to, say, the sales centre, you can go and look at the lagoon, which is absolutely stunning. And that's only, at the moment, what, 10% of how big that's going to be.
Wow.
So it's very green area, very luscious.
It feels very established.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we're in a beautiful cafe today, in the supermarket's pharmacy, you know, all of that is in place. It's not like kind of communities of the past where it's like, we're new, and you go, we are the only ones here. It's like, you know, 28 days later. This already feels, I think the school's a big part of that as well.
Yeah.
It already feels very well established.
Yeah, that's a massive driving force. RGS has a really good name in the UK already. Mm-hmm. So people want to be here. But yeah, if you're specifically looking at what is a settled community, the Elan community, it's been about 12 months since people first started moving in. If you go there now, everything's settled, everything's done, every driveway has a car.
Mm-hmm.
There's little to no stock, which might be a good thing, might be a bad thing for us. But the pools, the gyms there, the parks, everything's fully functioning, everything's open. And we're looking at, say, doing, when we go for viewings in Harmony, all of the gardening, not in the properties themselves, but that's all done, that's all ready for people to be enjoying when they do move in.
We've had questions coming in. Daniel Raphael with us today. We're also going to be chatting all things Talal Al Ghaf through until 4 o'clock. We had a message saying, are there any apartments available there? Jim was asking this earlier on 4001. Would you mind, and talk to me as if I'm 10, explaining what is on offer in terms of the properties you're showing people to right now?
So in Talal Al Ghaf itself, there are no apartments. It's only, so you've got Elan, which is only townhouses, three and four beds.
Okay.
Then I guess you could say that's the entry level into the community. The next step up from there would be Aura Gardens, which has a mixture of twin villas.
What's a twin villa? So is that nice where semi-detached?
Exactly. But there are over three floors.
And really my favorite recently was there's a duplex or a simplex. And I was like, a simplex, yes, just like a one, like just like an apartment.
Yeah, pretty much.
So twin villas. So you've got more garden around the side of the houses then, in those cases.
Yeah, slightly bigger plots, but it's really the built-up area that makes the difference. So they're 3,411 square foot over three floors. And one thing that's really nice about the area is that the developer gave owners at the time of purchase the opportunity to do customizations or purchase different options. Mm-hmm. So in the twin villas, you either have a closed kitchen downstairs or a additional bedroom, so you could choose. Then on the top floor, you could have another bedroom or just a family living space. So that's across different, in different communities, they offer different layouts in that respect as well.
And I presume it's a conscious decision for it to be those types of properties, looking at the demographic that's most likely going to live here. And is that being reflective when people are buying here? Are those those investors, or are they going to be owner-occupiers that you're seeing, Daniel?
So the Elan and the Aura communities, because there's Aura 1, 2 and Aura Gardens, I would say that's a real mix between family living and a lot of investors. Harmony we're starting to see predominantly being purchased by end users, very few investors. And then as you go around the community to, say, the Alaya community, which is the next step up, or the larger villas, then again, it's just less investors, more... investors in terms of being landlord investors.
And in terms of you being on this property for, coming up to a year now, I knew this was going to come in on the text line asking about prices. When we're talking about kind of, that you mentioned that entry point into the community, what would you say a starting price would be? What would you need to have in the bank? who do we need to make friends with in order to have that money in the bank, and how much?
So let's say we're stepping into the Harmony entry level, which is a standalone villa. The smallest side would be four bedrooms. That I would expect it to be road backing or extra or internal community road backing, mm-hmm. probably around 6.9 million. And then five bed, depends on when it hands over. That's a difficult part, to be honest. So for example, a five bedroom that we just sold in Harmony 2, that went for just under 8 million. In Harmony 1, that same unit would probably be closer to 8.59 million. So, but that's sort of the entry level for the villas. Twin villas, you're probably looking around 4.8 to 5.2. Obviously depends on what you're backing onto. And then townhouses, very entry level, maybe 3 million for a three bed, that sort of level.
Thank you so much. Really, really helpful. And we've got more questions coming in, but you can go and have a coffee. I'm going to speak to your colleague in just a few minutes. Daniel, for anyone who wants your information, if they want to send me the word tag, can I send out your profile on the website for House & House?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Daniel Ruffett with us today. We are going to be catching up, as I said, with more House & House experts throughout the afternoon. Laura Macklin is going to be joining us very soon indeed. We've had questions coming in as well asking, is it too soon to ask about resale value? Valerie, I will put that to Laura.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House & House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
And I have to say, this is not an area I am particularly familiar with. However, I've kind of fallen in love a little bit because Talal Gaff is one of the rising stars on Dubai property market. We have been speaking earlier to Daniel Raphael, and joining me now is Talal Gaff sales consultant Laura Macklin, who just told me off air how much you love this neighbourhood.
I genuinely think it's one of my favourite places across Dubai right now.
Tell us why, because you're not alone in that. It really has been embraced by investors, but... from what we've seen today, people who are buying to live here, Laura, what do you think the big kind of heart of it is?
I think, to be completely honest with you, they are seeing more the bigger picture of what the community is going to be like. So 100% it's going to be ready by 2027. So right now, for example, you've got the lagoon, which is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it sells itself as soon as I take buyers down there and they see it, they just completely fall in love with the place. So in terms of it being next to the school and everything like Dan touched on as well, it's just the bigger community and that feel of what it's going to be like over the next couple of years.
He gave us a little kind of insight into what's currently available. But as you said, the off-market is, off-plan market rather, is the biggie. That's around 90% of what's happening
right
now.
Yeah, 100%. So in terms of sub-communities that you've got across Talal, so the only one which is completely ready to move into right now is Elan. So Elan, you've only got 3 and 4 bed townhouses, which are absolutely gorgeous, and so many people want them already. And then you've got Harmony One, which is just in the process of handing over right now. So in terms of the off-plan resale, that is everything else left in Talal.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you, because Valerie was in touch earlier saying, retag, is it too soon to ask about resale value?
Not at all. So that is where it's absolutely thriving as a community right now. So in terms of the off-plan resale, pretty much everything is sold out now directly from the developer. There's very, very few mansions which are still available, but it's the payment plans which are seen as so attractive to sellers or buyers. So essentially, if you are a buyer, you're buying into the payment plan. It's not the ready property yet, but 100%, I mean, sellers are still making their money back.
And Laura, how do you think it fits in with real estate trends in sites so far in 2024? What, you know, is it kind of reflective of the rest of Dubai? Is it doing its own thing? What are you seeing when you kind of zoom out a bit?
I mean, zooming out, comparing it to other communities, let's say, for example, Dubai Hills, there's a lot of conversation around people saying tag is following those footsteps and how it's going to hand over.
Very successful.
Yeah, footsteps. Very, very successful. A lot of people wanting to obviously invest into the area or move in themselves over the next couple of years. So, I mean, compared, for example, you've got Harmony, like I just touched on, compared to Sidra, the prices of what you can get now compared to the size and the square foot of the unit, it's only going to go upwards. So in terms of trends and areas like that, it's definitely one to invest into.
Laura Macklin, we're going to keep her for a chat. We've got more questions as we're going to be talking about the real estate market in general. The market report is out. And what can we expect? She's got the inside track. We're sitting in a beautiful cafe. There's supermarkets, there's pharmacies. But what else is to come for Talal Al Ghaf? We will be finding out. Plus, we've had a legal question that I'm going to put to Laura as well.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House and House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
And we've got sales consultant Laura Macklin with us today. She's talking earlier about just how passionate she is around living in this area and ultimately allowing people to kind of live their best lives here. And from, I know I've said it before, people are just coming in, having their coffee after school, super friendly, and it feels really established, even though it is pretty new. And that's such a compliment, I guess, when it comes to the planning of the area. Is that something you get feedback on, about just, you know, the planting and the style of it all?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you in terms of, like you say, there's still so much more to happen here, but what is built already, people are absolutely loving, whether it's the cafe that we're sat in right now or the gym and all the local shops that you've got nearby. It's a lovely feel that people have got already that are living here.
So we talked earlier about how this kind of fits into the overall Dubai property market right now. What about that investment piece? Can I ask you in terms of how Talal Al Ghaf's performing for investors? Because as we alluded to, you know, huge off-plan opportunities there to kind of, you know, fast forward to 2027, you said, things are going to be finished?
Yeah, everything is set to be complete 2027, yeah.
So what can we expect and what would you predict?
I mean, if you bought initially off-plan, you will be walking around with a bigger smile on your face
you
right now.
You can spot them a mile off.
You can spot them from a mile off. So in terms of, like I say, if you did initially buy it off-plan, the premium that sellers are already making, I mean, you're seeing some people have already doubled what they initially bought them for, which is,
I hate people like
that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of sad people that wish they bought 12 months ago now. But with that being said, although you could say right now it is more of a seller's market, just because of the profits, I mean, you have buyers that initially were looking 12 months ago and now they think, I wish I got them then.
Yeah.
So there's no kind of information out there that looks like Talal's going to slow down anytime soon.
Message from H on the text line saying, tell me more about the lagoons. You touched on it earlier,
yeah,
and you said it was beautiful, but can you kind of, I guess, walk us around?
Yeah. I mean, I call it a mini Maldives when I go down there. It looks gorgeous, but right now it's only 10% complete. So I don't know if anyone's been down to actually see, just so you can kind of imagine the scale of how big it'll be when it's complete.
How many units?
So you've got a lot which are completely lagoon facing. So you've got all the Elysian mansions, the Lanaya and mansions, which will be right in the middle.
And these are the ones where, like, I feel like I'm in a music video.
These are, you've made it if you bought one.
How
of
many
these
bedrooms and how much are we talking, Laura?
I mean, there's one that sold last week for 207 million. So that was the highest transacting one in Talal Al Ghaf so far.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Single?
I'm like, where's the owner?
I'm just going to go and make friends with that particular.
Yeah.
We'll go. That's amazing. And in terms of when we're looking at those kind of really high spec properties, how involved can a potential purchaser be in really crafting it to be something they want? Because Dan mentioned earlier, you know, earlier opportunities, you could have that closed off kitchen, or you know, you could be having an extra bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, is there that flexibility?
I mean, absolutely. So in terms of if you did buy it initially off plan, there's always upgrades that they can change, and there's cut-off points depending on the sub-community to see if they want to change anything. But with that being said, I mean, the beauty of it being a newer, more modern development, I think they're a lot more lenient as to what you can do to a property right now when you're comparing it to maybe Emar, and they're very set in stone of what you can and can't do. You can do a lot more with them.
Laura, we've run out of time. Sounds like you've been very safe hands indeed, if she might be a little bit jealous that you get to live here when she's
working. As long as I can come round for cocktails.
There you go. Little coffee with Laura. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.